Welcome to episode 35 of the Worship Drummer podcast. This is John Manna, your host. You are a part of a global group of Christian drummers who are continually striving to put the heart before beat. Why? Because we believe that worship is about the work of your hands and heart. Follow along online at worshipdrummer.com, or you can always hit me up on Instagram at worshipdrummer. Thanks for listening and enjoy this episode. Well, what is up, Worship Drummer fam? I'm honored that you would take time out of your busy life to listen to this podcast. And we have an exciting episode coming up with HB. That's Harold Brown from Mav City Music. But before we get into that, I just want to mention that this episode is brought to you by worshipdrumsamples.com. This is a project that we've launched. And basically, the goal of worshipdrumsamples.com is to take the guesswork out of using drum samples in worship. We've created a library of over 100 songs already that your churches are currently singing, and we provide you the samples you would need for each of them. For one low monthly price, you get access to our entire catalog with unlimited downloads. And again, worshipdrumsamples.com, you can check it out. You can find episode show notes on our website, worshipdrummer.com/035. That's worshipdrummer.com/035 for episode 35. With that being said, I want to head into my conversation with Harold Brown, where we talk about his upbringing, some of his drumming influences, and also Mav City Music, along with his drum gear rundown, and then some personal advice for worship drummers. Here's my conversation with Harold Brown. Well, I'm honored to have with us today, we call him HB, but formerly Howard Brown. He's a drummer for Mav City Music, and we're going to have a great episode in store for everyone tuning in. So welcome to the Worship Drummer podcast, Harold.
Hey, what's up, man? How you doing?
We're good. We're good. Honored that you would join us today. And this is via podcast audio form, but also on YouTube. So to both audiences, wherever you're watching or consuming this, we know that this will be of high value for you. That's our goal today. And we're going to get to know HB a little better. Some of you have listened to Mav City Music. Maybe you went to the tour. And so this is going to be a reflection on a lot of that, but also we'll get to know his upbringing. And so let's jump in. First question for you is tell us a little bit about your upbringing. Was it always in the church context? When did you start playing drums? And what kind of influenced you along the way? We'll start with that.
I definitely started playing drums in church. My family would say it's probably two or three was when I started playing drums. So I've been playing drums for a long time, for about 26 years now.
Wow.
I've from church to after church, I did all music stuff in school, whether it was drumline, indoor drumline, symphonic band, or like whatever band you had, jazz band, which I would be playing drum set on. Like it depended, but I did everything I musically could in school. Influences. Growing up, it was a lot of like my peers or like family members who I grew up in church with. And I would even say it's probably the same now today. It's like I have a lot of the greats, the Steve Jordans, the Vinnies, the Gadsons, like all of these amazing names. But I think the people that really impact me are my friends that I tangibly see and get to, you know, hug and, you know his or her story behind the kit, and just life, because I think that's what makes us who we are as musicians. But influences when I was growing up was a cousin of mine who actually played drums first, and then he played bass. His name's Darren Steele. Incredible musician. And then another one of my family friends, his name is DeAndre Baldwin. and we'll call him Bubba, but he played drums. And yeah, it was kind of like started from there. And then once I, you know, went through high school, some of my good friends, Matt, Ben, all of my drumline buddies, we would kind of go off of each other, as in like sharpening iron to iron, like, oh, like this is what I learned. I learned this cadence, like, oh, here, let's learn this together. So that type of mentality. But and then along with life, it's just friends that I've met along the way, and we've stayed friends and become brothers and family. So yeah. And I'll name a few just so you guys can like do some research.
Love it.
I have a good buddy named Freddie Sheed. He's in London. He's played for Japanese House, 1975. He's on the Louis Capaldi gig now. He's played with a bunch of different people. Insane drummer, producer. He's just crazy. Trying to think of some other cats that are
How over. Would you spell his last name?
Sheed. I'm pretty sure it's Sheed, but let me make sure before I get in trouble.
Because if we're gonna do some research, I gotta know how to spell it, his last name too.
Yeah, it's Freddie Sheed. So F R E D D Y Sheed, S H E E D.
Sheed.
So yeah, like Freddie's one of a good buddy. So I used to play for an artist named Jacob Banks, and I would spend a ton of time over there. So we would connect and hang out, and we would end up doing a lot of the same festivals. So we would just, we were fond of each other and our playing and just fashion and a bunch of other stuff that we both connected on. So yeah, he's insane. Check him out. Over here on the US side, we got a buddy in LA. His name is Dan Bailey. He is insane, a great guy, a great drummer. And there's, I mean, there's, the list could go on and on and on. A guy that I actually just finally met in person this past week at the CMAs was Terrence Clark. He's a killer drummer. He's on the gig with Keith Urban now, and he's been doing a lot of crazy stuff. He's always doing something crazy, but he's dope. I mean, I could literally name a ton of drummers, but yeah, those are just a few guys that are just out here killing it right now. So yeah.
Love it. I remember Terrence because he plays Istanbul, I think, right?
Yeah.
So I remember 3-4 years ago, his picks of his kit were always like so sweet. And so I was like, who is this guy? So that's where I first kind of found him on Instagram.
Yep, T. Clark.
Yeah. That's so wild, man. And in your home growing up, like, were your parents musical? Did that translate to you?
Yeah, I feel like my whole family is just all musical, but not in the sense of like instrumentalist. Like so my dad was like a DJ and like well known, like everyone knew who he was. Like he's the guy.
Love
my
it.
Aunt, who's like my mom, she played piano and was kind of like the choir director. So I've played probably more gigs than I could count with her, just me and her alone going and playing for different choruses or choirs or conferences or like church services, like whatever. So yeah, I mean, they were all like, my sister would sing. My family was essentially a band, but not really a band. But yeah, everyone in my family either loved music or played an instrument or sung in church or did something like that. So yeah,
I love it. And I asked that question because I wasn't necessarily raised in a musical home. My dad didn't play anything or sing at all. My mom, she would sing while she did housework, but that's kind of where it stopped. But I asked the question because I feel like some people might feel at a disadvantage saying, oh, but see, he had a musical family or upbringing, whereas maybe I don't. What advice can you give to someone who's looking to grow but doesn't have maybe the influence around them, whether it's from church or home? Where are some avenues they could look to grow in their musicianship and find that influence?
I mean, I hope this answers the question, but I would say just like find the place where you love it. Like there was an old saying where it's like where go where you're watered, or like it was using the analogy of a plant sprouting out. But I think if you like find that place, and it doesn't have to be a tangible place on earth, like a physical location, but like
a metaverse,
if it's, yeah, it's like, if it's, I don't know, if you like jazz and the first time you heard jazz was in a Starbucks or whatever coffee shop, then you started looking up who Louis Armstrong was, and you started looking up who, you know, Layla Hathaway or Robert Glasper, like you started looking this stuff up and you're like, whoa, this is the, I'm now into this dark hole, like I have to find out more about this stuff, like learn about it, be a student, always be a student. So if it's something that's really like you can't stop singing that line or that guitar line for like days on end, figure out why you can't do that, like figure out why you love it so much, and then from there you'll start to pivot to different avenues and like, oh, I like this, so that took me to John Mayer, John Mayer took me to Eric Clapton, like it'll just go on, music is infinite. So I would say just always be a student. And if you love something, figure out why you love it.
That's awesome. Also, I can add to that YouTube, Instagram. Like, you can go down rabbit trails all day.
Yeah, I feel like Instagram is kind of turning into the new YouTube.
No, it's very true. I can't tell you how many times I've deep dived into... Let's say I started with John Mayer, ended up somehow at Dave Matthews Band, just to say, but you can learn and be influenced by their musicianship, by how they perform, their solos. So, you know, I think whereas back in the day, it might be harder to find the influence. Like you said, do your research, dig deep. I think we have more tools available today than ever before, obviously.
Oh, most definitely.
And definitely. Something for me that transformed my life was attending live concerts, because some things are taught and others are caught. So my first, and I'll call it like this, non-Christian concert, because I grew up in church world, very like, sheltered, Hosanna, Integrity, Maranatha, back in the day. And my drum teacher was like, well, first thing you got to do is buy these albums, Sting and the Police, like he just, stuff I've never explored. And Dave Matthews Band was one of them. So they came to my hometown in Montreal where I grew up. And it was my first non-Christian concert where I was blown away. Like an 8-minute solo where they just went off. And I was like, wow, this is insane. So, influence is all around us. We got to find it. Hit up a drum festival, especially for our niche of drummers. Yeah. Which, are there any drum fests around the U.S. that you're aware of nowadays?
I would have no idea, to be honest. I love drums and I love music, but I would have no idea. The only one that I know of is like...
Modern Drummer Festival they used to do?
Oh, yeah. I guess that is one. I was going to say PASIC and... Is it AIM? Is that one? It's not AIM. AIM's a school. See, I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't.
No. So in Montreal, we used to have an annual drum fest by a guy named Ralph Angelillo. He put those on.
Dope.
So I got to see Vinny... John J.R. Robinson, all the greats from like 2000 to 2005.
Dang.
And then they canceled it. I don't know if it was because the guy was getting old. Maybe he was sick, but they stopped it. Now Drumeo out in the west side in BC, they did one just before COVID. I think it was called Drumeo Drum Fest or something. And then because of COVID, they stopped it last year, but I think they're going to do one again. But those are events that you learn so much.
Oh, yeah.
So that's influence. Another one is you can get out to a Mav City tour, which I think is a good segue into maybe just tell us how this band, group of songwriters, worshipers... can you give us the origin story and then leading up to this first debut tour that just ended for you?
So the origin story, It's so funny. So we do these Q&As on tour, and everyone asked that. How did it start? Whose idea? And to be honest, it wasn't this thought out planned thing. It wasn't this like master plan of, you know, a super band or whatever. So I was a part of a band before called House Fires.
Yeah.
And Tony Brown and Jonathan Jay, they're like two of my close buddies, like brothers. We've known each other for probably 10 years now. They started MAV. So they initially started MAV, and I think from the leaders that you see today, that started from a group text. So that started from, I think, them just getting together with some friends and writing songs, and then it turned into, from there, you know, writing camps of doing like a 3-day camp. Like the first MAV record that's not in Reading, because there's one that's in Reading where it's everyone sitting around a piano, and that's Jonathan Jay playing the piano.
Okay.
But the record that's in Atlanta at our studio here called 1971, it wasn't really thought, like it wasn't really prepped or thought out. Like I think made the decision to do it maybe a day before. So it was like a 3-day writing camp. And the last day was when we did that recording. And that's the recording that has Refiner and Communion and Most Beautiful, I think, is on that record.
I think so.
And Take Me Back. There's a ton of songs on that record. But yeah, so that's really how it started. And then from there, we just, you know, kept writing songs and kept just being us, authentically us. And now it's, yeah, where it's gotten to, massive arena shows. So, yeah.
Yeah, so tell us about that first debut tour, maybe not your first tour as a drummer perhaps, but with MAV, what was every night like? Obviously every night's different, but what was the feeling as you reflect back on this debut tour? What did you see God do, you know, that you can see with your eyes, at least in the room?
On the tour, so we did, I think, what was, apparently this has never been done, which is kind of the MAV way of doing things. We did, I think, every style venue on this tour, down from a church at like a 3,000 cap room to amphitheaters outside, which is like 12,000 in Cali. And then we did arenas.
Wow.
So we did each tier. And I would say what was awesome to do that, and it wasn't really about the amount of people, like that doesn't really matter. I think it's you're seeing people after going through the year that everyone just went through in the pandemic, and you know, people losing loved ones and jobs and financial stability and all of that. I think you see people finding hope again, and just being able to be open to finding hope again. And I think the people that come to our shows aren't church people. Like it's not people that you would see typically on a Sunday morning at church. I think it's people that have been on the fence. Wow. And that have been trying to figure out like, okay, what is this? Like, what is this thing with religion? What is this thing with God? And I think it's beautiful to see people that just look like everyday normal people that want to, you know, find hope again and be hopeful for what's to come. So, yeah, it was sweet and incredible, and looking forward to our next shows coming. So, yeah.
That's cool. And what is it about what MAV does that you think attracts the people who are on the fence versus just the church folk?
I think it's we're just ourselves. That's really it. There's no other, like, we can't be anything other than ourselves. So we don't really try to conjure up moments. The flows that you hear on the songs weren't planned. The flows that you hear on the songs that turn into a song weren't planned. We really don't plan a lot of, you know, those moments, and they just come out and they happen. And I think that's a part of why people like us, is because we flow outside of the normal structured line. We are ourselves. And if that gets us in trouble, it's okay. Like, we're tomorrow's going to come and we're all going to be good. So,
yeah. Amen. So a spinoff that thought is for drummers. Can you give any advice on how to become more comfortable in those spontaneous flow moments where I know a lot of classically trained, you know, give me the chart, they have a hard time breaking out of their square box.
Yeah.
So I think, any advice on that?
I think advice to the more structured drummers that you have to be unstructured. it's the church sets that you think go left when it actually goes right, because that moment where your worship leader went from, I don't know, you make me brave to how great thou art, that moment shifted something in the spirit in the room. And, you know, someone actually had a moment with God. Like, sometimes we look at things that are going wrong as in like, oh, we just messed up someone's encounter with God. But that's actually probably what helped someone else, because we're so used to the mundane. Okay, wake up on Sunday mornings, put your suit and your tie on, go to church, sit in the third row, and let's do the same thing until we die. When it's like, the reality is that that's not God, you know, that's not what it's all about. So I would say, to go back, for a more structured drummer, just be okay when things, you know, go out of the way. But one very important thing is that, as a drummer, you are the timekeeper. You keep everyone on the train track. So you need to be aware of the leader, of who's leading it. If you can read body language or, you know, hand signs or signals, make sure that you're locked in. So if they want to go to that next thing that was unrehearsed, you know how to keep everybody in line and in check. And I think it's very helpful when the drummer can lead from that place and know that, you know, oh, well, if something happens, I got everybody.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, that's cool. And on that note, one of my friends was at one of the worship nights that you guys on the tour.
Oh, yeah, he said, what's up? Yeah.
And so he messaged me after and was like, because he's not a music guy at all. Like, he loves worship, but he doesn't play anything. He's tone deaf as far as I'm concerned. But one of his worship guys from the church was with him, and they had this debate about, were they using any multi-tracks or not? And he couldn't, the worship guy was like, honestly, I don't think so. So can I ask straight up? I'm sure there were some elements, but were there multi-tracks on the tour?
No. I mean, yeah, but no. Like, yeah, there were. But it wasn't to the extent of how everyone else uses them.
Yeah.
And depending on which part of the set, it probably wasn't.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it just depends, man. It just depends on where, like, which part of the set we're in and how we're using it. But there are some bare tracks.
Nice.
But yeah.
And when it goes, like, spontaneous in a live setting, do you, like, tap your tempo and still use the click, or do you guys just roll without it?
It just depends. If we're doing like on tour, typically, so I've mapped out in some of the songs spaces for us to go spontaneous, whether it's an 8-bar grid or 16 before we go into the bridge, or coming out of the song, transition into the next song, you have 8 bars before we count up. Like, it just really depends. And some of that is on grid, some of that is off.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just depends.
Love it. So let's get to some gear if we can.
Yeah.
I know there are a lot of gear heads out there. I'm personally not a big gear nerd, but I do love Franklin drums. And that video that you shot just showing your stuff, I saw it on Instagram.
Yeah.
If you want to just, I know people can go and we could link to that one as well, but
most definitely.
Why did you choose Franklin drums? And then maybe if you want to just explain a bit of your setup to us.
So the reason why I chose Franklin is because Grady, Grady hit me up a while ago. This was like probably a year or 2 years ago. And he was just kind. He was like, yo, I'll send you some drums for this record or whatever. It was for, we were doing, what record were we doing? Oh, it was the Upper Room Mav record. And he sent me a kit. And I was like, yeah, I was like, I'll play it. Like, so it was just like a genuine kindness of like wanting to take care of me and like help me out. And for me, that went farther than me trying to get an endorsement with someone else who doesn't really probably, and it's no shade, it's just they don't, probably don't even know your name. And I've had some not so good experiences with other drum companies. But yeah, Grady and Will are like some of the dopest guys and like genuinely mean the best, and they care about drums and people. So yeah, that's why I play Franklin. And the drums sound incredible.
Yeah.
Like the drums really do sound good. So, yeah.
My next episode is, this is just a spoiler alert for everyone else, is with Will. So it was hard to book it with him, but finally we nailed down a date for next Monday. Yeah. So we'll record that one. So yeah, tell us the breakdown of your kit and your cymbals if you can.
So I'll go cymbals first.
Yeah.
To the left, to the right. I hope I can remember this right. Clap stack. It's the whole, like the full clap stack to the 17 extension thing.
Wow.
Hi-hats beneath that are 16 or 15 traditional lights.
Yeah.
The crash right above that, which is my main crash, it is a power crash, 20. To the right of that is my ride, which is a 22 traditional jazz. It's insane. Right beneath that is a 20 exist dry dark. It's the best effects, like cymbal. I personally think it's like a split between a China or like an ozone symbol, or like it just gives me everything that I want out of like stabs or quick accents. And then right above that is my 20 traditional jazz crash ride. And it's my favorite symbol. It's like the best symbol ever.
Love it.
So those are my symbols, all Istanbul Agops. I love what they're doing. I know the US guy's named Scott, and those guys are incredible. They're doing some amazing things with the new cymbals. I feel like they're always being innovative in crazy ways. And the clap stack was originally made by Trevor Lawrence. He's the guy. Drums. So I used I actually have it, I think. Which Grady's gonna kill me because this isn't a
that's the ANF one,
but this is my little piccolo snare that I use. It's a 12 by 3.5. I use that, so far left, that's like clapstack here, that snare's here. Right beneath that snare is a 14 by 7. I always get this wrong, and I don't know why. It's a 14 by 7 copper. It's not brass. On my video, I said brass because I wasn't thinking. It was a long day. It's a copper, penny copper. And then to the right of that, I have a 14 by 5.5 aluminum. And I love it. It's like a clone of my 60s acrylite. And I love it. It sounds so good. The toms are 10, 12, 16. And they're all maple. The kick is a 22 by 14 and it is maple poplar. I love it. It's so great. And yeah, that's my kit. I love it.
Amazing. So for all the gear peoples, there you go. It's a rundown. We'll link to that video regardless in the show notes. And to change gears again with a different question. You're also a producer.
Yes, I'm also a producer.
So just because I know in the last couple of years, I've seen a lot of drummers who used to just drum. Now they have their hand in producing. Two examples, Austin Davis.
That's my boy. That's like my brother, man. He came out to one of the shows. Actually, so another role that I play on the tour, I'm the musical director.
Yes, I forgot to ask that.
Created essentially the music, as in like how we play it, all of the arrangements going from the top of the show to the bottom, and helping design the show. So, but Austin was out because we featured Cody Carnes on a few songs that we may or may not be doing a record.
Love it.
So yeah, but Austin was there, and like Austin's like we're just always going back and forth on production stuff. He's killing everything, and he's the guy. But yeah, from drummer to producer to Austin also sings and has his own stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah.
That's been cool. So he's one guy. Another one I just found out more recently, David Whitworth at Bethel.
D. Witt?
Produced. Yeah. He produced their last album, Homecoming, co-produced it, I think. And like, for me, I'm amazed by, it's like, I don't know if you know this kind of saying in church world, but a lot of worship leaders become senior pastors.
And I'm
one of them, but someone told me this once and it never hit me. They're like, I think why that's a common thing is because as worshipers, we know how to get into God's presence.
Yep.
And so effectively we're better equipped. I don't know what the right word to say is, but to lead the church in that way. So that was an interesting thought. So drummers becoming producers, is that like a similar analogy? Is because you have a more full grasp of the music as the backbone, that it kind of, we're thinking in that realm already, so producing becomes like this natural, or maybe not natural, but something that we gravitate towards?
I feel like, I mean, for me, it feels like the natural progression, because it's like I'm already essentially leading the band with time. And like, I don't even think, if you notice, like watch certain bands, most of the time, everyone's attention, if they're not out, they're looking at the drummer.
Yeah.
If anything goes wrong, they're looking at the drummer. If anyone else during the show messes up, the crowd probably wouldn't notice it.
Yeah.
If the drummer messes up, everyone's stopping. So the drummer carries a lot of weight in musical sense, but just in the reality of like, everyone's looking for me when the time goes wrong. Everyone's looking for me to start the song, to end the song, even if it goes left or right. Like, so I feel like it makes sense. Like, we're the timekeepers. Like, so when it comes to doing records, who's going to keep the time? Like, obviously you can go get someone else, but the reality is that it seems like a natural progression of like, oh, I already play drums. Like, let's do other things. Like, oh, if I know how to lead from the drums and I know how to call numbers, if we now go to a different vamp, I might not know how to play in every key. I might not know how to play piano as well as some of my brothers do, but I know how to create melodies and lines that might fit in this groove or might fit in this transition. And then I can say, all right, cool. Awesome, guys. We're going to tag this 6-4-1.
Yeah.
All right, start on the two, walk up. Like, we can go. So, but I think it is a natural progression. Like, you have to, you know how to crawl before you walk. So as long as you know how to lead from the kit first, I think you can go wherever you want. But yeah, I just feel like it's natural, man. It just happens.
That's cool.
And I also think I think drummers make the best MDs. And not to say it for myself, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that I feel like drummers make the best MDs, because it's like you're the point guard.
Yeah.
And I know a ton of incredible piano players that are MDs, but there's just something about having the person who's locking in the rhythm, like, you know, spreading out across everyone and saying like, oh, like here, you on keys, do this. You like, I don't know. I feel like the perspective is different from a piano player or a bass player or a guitar player, but yeah.
Yeah. I was talking with Hope Darst, who's at, well, yeah, at the Belonging, but I asked her, I said, maybe this is not a fair question, but, and actually Andrew Holt was there too. I was like, who is your favorite drummer at the Belonging? Because I think they have about 10 on their roster. And she said, hands down, Austin. And she said, they're all good, but Austin is not just a drummer.
Right.
He's a worship leader from the drums.
Right.
And it lends to exactly what you're saying. So I have a personal question. So as you have an MD mic in your space, how does that, do you have a volume switch on and off so that
my setup is a bit different. So I have a switch on my mic. That mic goes strictly to band, to my guy. And then I have a foot switch that's only for leaders.
Nice.
So when I'm playing and I want to say something to the leaders, I'll just hit my foot switch and then talk to them. Or if it's like, sometimes like there'll be certain times in the show where Chandler will come up and play piano and I'll be like, yo, Sam Drake is our monitors guy. I'll be like, yo, Drake, send me to Chandler. And I'll just go straight to him. But if it's something where I need to talk to like all the leaders at once, like, hey, look, we're not going to go into this song. We're going straight to the outro. Boom. I'll talk to all of them while touching that. And that will go to everyone.
That's cool.
It'll go to my band and the leaders.
So. Yeah. Wow. That's cool. Just on the producing side of things, if any drummer listening wants to kind of make their way to the producer seat, do you have any tips to some nuggets for them? Just like focus on these two things.
I would say probably it's kind of similar to being a drummer. Like each drummer, we have our own voice. So each producer, I feel like, should have that same thing. So I know, and I've had artists come to me and it's worked. This is actually a funny thing. I've had artists come to me and was like, hey, look, like we're wanting to produce this song, but we've gone to a few other guys and it hasn't just been it. Sometimes people take that as in like, I'm not good enough. That's not it. It's just, it's not the right spot. It's not the right gig. It's not the right song. It's not the right, you know, voice on it. And it's not because you aren't good enough, but I think the thing about it is as you becoming a producer, you will find your voice. So knowing what you do best is a great quality to have. So as a producer, just keep finding out what you like, finding out what you don't like, so you can create that voice and people can know like, oh, this guy's killer with, you know, this type of sound. This guy could kill this, like this guy could do this and it would sound incredible. I mean, like, I would say just keep finding yourself.
I love it.
Your sound. Yeah.
That's cool. Let's talk a bit more on the spiritual side. Let's go down one more layer. What has God been showing you, teaching you about yourself in this season, like about who God is, maybe some important stuff that God has just been bringing to your attention?
Man, I joke a lot with God and it's like fun. It's not a game, but it is a game.
Right.
And it's like with everything, with career, with money, with whatever, like sometimes I'll say stuff and it's not really a joke. I'll just be like, man, I'd really love to do this one day. And I find like all of my gigs that people would be like, oh my God, how are you doing this? How did you get there? And it's been just me talking to God and having that personal time. I just played the CMAs. Now this is last week. And it was with Jennifer Hudson and Chris Stapleton. And those are massive names. A few weeks prior, or maybe it was earlier than that, I said something about like, man, I'd love to you know, I've always had this thing of like, man, I would love to play a country gig. Or like, man, I would love to just do a gig with country artists. And one thing I've realized as I'm getting older is that like be careful what you ask for and be careful what you pray for. Like be careful because it will happen. And then like, that's not like a weird, scary way of like, oh, be aware. Yeah. Like, no, like it's true. Like God cares about you. God cares about your feelings. He cares about your heart. Most importantly, he cares about your desires. And sometimes I think we have this posture of coming to God with like, hey, God, well, if I could just get this little bit, like, you know, it's like, no, like God, he's going to give you 10 times whatever you're asking him for. So I met in person. He's a drummer, MD. His name is Rex Hardy. And he's an incredible drummer, but most importantly, I think he has the heart of God. Like he genuinely cares about people and he's funny. So he's just a sweet guy. But, I have been looking up to him for years and I don't even think he knew it, but, I reached out to him and I was like, yo, bro, just want to say that I've been a fan of you. Cause I think he followed me on Instagram or something. I was like, yo, like I've been a fan of yours, like for a long time. Like I've been watching you, following you and seeing you be an MD and how you do that has encouraged me to be an MD. And now I'm the MD for Mav and like all of these things, just really sharing my heart to him. And I was like, if you could come to a show, just let me know. And I could, you know, I could get you to comps or whatever you need. He was like, bro, I would love to, like my wife is a big fan. Like, I was like, cool. So I was like, I'll have you guys out at Chicago show. And he came out and we got to meet in person. And it was, I don't know, it was just a beautiful exchange. I got to see a hero of mine and kind of talk to him about it and kind of personally like give him his flowers and just be like, yo, like you're incredible. Like, I really appreciate you coming and taking the time. And yeah, it was just this sweet, incredible moment. And then he sent me a text. It was like, I don't know, 2 or 3 a.m. in the morning where I was. But he was essentially asking me if I was going to be, you know, like, where was my hometown? Where am I based out of? Like, you know, what's my schedule with Mav and when it would end and blah, blah, blah. And he asked me if I was available for a certain amount of dates. And then he was like, yo, could you be in Nashville during these days? And I was like, yeah, I could. And at the time, he didn't tell me who it was. And then he told me, I was just like, I think for me, it wasn't even about, there were two sides of the situation. It was one, the fact that my hero met me. We had an exchange. We talked. Then he hits me up to fill in for him at a gig.
Yeah.
Like that's something that like I would have never thought would happen. That's something that I would never dream of. And then it was the other side, getting to play the Country Music Awards with Grammy, Emmy Award winning Jennifer Hudson and Chris Stapleton, who's like the guy.
Yeah.
And getting to the rehearsal, doing that, talking with their band, like, and their band is stacked with like legendary musicians, like cats that are killing. And it was just like, I don't know, it just made me think of like a lot about how God really does care. And sometimes it's in the small things, how someone could come up and greet you and be like, yo, look, like, you know, I love the work that you've been doing with Mav. And like, I see you. And it's just like, wait, you're telling me that? Like, it's small stuff, but I think people don't realize that. And the fact that like, the fact that Rex asked me to fill in for him was more than what I would have ever. If Rex would have just said, yo, can I borrow some gear? I would have been blown out of the water. Like if Rex would have said anything like, yo, can you come drum tech for me? I would have been like, bro, yes. When? What do you need me to bring? How? Like, but the fact that he was just like so kind and generous and be like, yo, look, can you do this for me? I'm just like, wait, what? But yeah, God definitely cares about you and your heart and, you know, how you honor him, I think is along those lines as well, and like how you steward what you have. Because I think sometimes we want all these other things, but we don't steward what God has given us, you know, that is right in front of us, which may look like serving at our church that meets the same time each week, and how we carry ourselves in those rehearsals, how we, you know, talk to one another, how we, like, I could go all down the list, but yeah, I would just say God cares about you, and don't stop dreaming whatever you're dreaming right now.
Man, some deep stuff. But yeah, God is good. He cares about us.
Yep.
And never underestimate his ability to meet and exceed what we've prayed for and just simply asked him for.
It's real.
It's a good word, man. Are there any closing thoughts that you'd love to leave with our Worship Drummer fam? Just maybe a word of encouragement, whether it's practical advice, any spiritual advice. You get to pick one final tidbit.
I can do kind of both. Advice, and it also goes along with spirituality. I think I'm trying not to be maverick and get myself in trouble. All right, I'll put it this way. I think what we need in this world today is for everyone to just be themselves. We don't need another clone of myself and how I play. We don't need another clone of Austin Davis and how he plays. We don't need another clone of David Whitworth and the Bethel sound. Like, we need people being themselves. And I think most importantly, outside of drumming and life, we need people to be themselves. Mm. I think God really honors and wants you to be authentic in how he made you. Because it's funny and beautiful how we're all so different, but we're made in his image. So I think we just, as hard as it can be sometimes, because we look at people and we're like, man, that's so cool. How is that deep snare, that sound? Like, how does Paul Mayberry get all of these tones? Like, how does, and then you go and you try to make that, you try to duplicate the same thing when in your own life, God has blessed you with your own sound. And yeah, I would just say one thing that I wish someone would have told me this a long time ago, is to just be yourself. Like, be yourself. It's okay if you think it's weird. It's weird to you, but it's like insanely beautiful to someone else. But just be yourself in every way, spiritually, emotionally, like, be yourself. Just be yourself.
Amen. I heard it said that God can't bless who we pretend to be. And
nope, because it's not you.
Yeah. So I love it, man. Be yourself. Listen, how can we trek with you on social? Are there any websites or links that we should check out? And we'll also list them in the show notes.
So, yeah, I mean, just follow my Instagram. I'm like in the process of trying to figure some other stuff out, but yeah, just follow my Instagram, The Harold Brown. That's my handle. But yeah, everything's kind of there. I had two different pages for like my artist page and then my own. I was just like, this is too much. I don't have enough time. So yeah, it's all there. And I'll have some updates on some cool, exciting news that's coming up. So yeah, just follow me.
Yeah, love it. We'll link to all of that in the show notes. And HB, thanks so much for your time and for your wisdom. It's tremendously valued. Well, there you have it, my conversation with Harold Brown from Mav City Music. And I hope that it's added value not only to your life, but of course to your drumming as well. You can find episode show notes on our website, worshipdrummer.com/035. That's worshipdrummer.com/035 for episode 35. And I just want to, again, encourage you to visit the sponsor of this show, worshipdrumsamples.com. And lastly, as we end every episode, we say, always remember to keep the heart before beat. This is John Manna for the Worship Drummer Podcast.